Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You've just tuned in. My name is Mal Viyava and the program Dare to Be Different. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in with us via the audio streaming, Mirim 1548 Satellite Islam, and on the DSTV Book 826. And I know many of us are not out in our gardens as yet, and some of us around with the family around the breakfast table. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin, and she's been sharing some wonderful ideas. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Hello again. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, autumn. Now, one of the things that we have in autumn is the aloes. Tell us something about the aloes.
Oh, I can't believe how early some of the aloes have started flowering. So the aloes are looking lovely this year. That's, you know, I love the fact that the flowers are going to provide a lot of nectar. So the sunbirds are coming back into our garden. The bees are busy buzzing about trying to collect as much nectar that they can take back into their hives. And as I say, they just any type of one that you want is just looking really good. You have the hedgehogs and the porcupines. There's one called Sunrise. There's just a very wide variety of aloes around at the moment. So I think we're quite spoiled for choice. And you know what I love about an aloe is whether you have just one and it's maybe popping out of a grassland in your garden, or one in a pot, or you have three or four that are clustered together to create like a little grove or in a rockery, aloes, as I say, it doesn't matter if it's just one or more, they make a statement all by themselves, especially at this time of year.
You know, when you look at an aloe, and I know, I normally just get my one aloe in a pot, you know, it makes such a stunning effect. You just come in and it's a wow factor. You look at that and you say, wow, maybe there's something I could recreate in my garden, I could take back to home. And I think that's something about an aloe. You know, it's an unassuming plant, you know, throughout the year, but yes, when it does flower now in winter, it's such a stunning show.
Yeah, I really do. Actually, I never used to appreciate them, and I always remember back then, now this is many, many years ago, when we were talking about, like, the World Cup and everything, and, you know, the government was planting all the aloes in amongst all the pavement. And I thought, I can't understand why they're doing that. Aloes just didn't say, we are amazing. And then I think I really took my time to go and look at them and appreciate how statuesque they are and as a focal point, and I thought, oh, wow, the government did an incredible job. And I think they actually introduced a lot of aloes to us, which maybe we weren't familiar with. You know, we were used to lush green and not actually keeping in tune with what our gardens and what the environment is. We need to plant water-wise plants, and especially in pavements and between roadsides and that sort of thing. And so by doing that, I think they introduced aloes to us in a, these could look amazing, and we can put them in our gardens. And as you say, I mean, your one pot looks beautiful, and it doesn't matter if it's one pot or a whole lot of them together.
You know, what about, it's just a structural, you know, effect of this particular plant. And like you said, when you go back and you look at it, then you can see the beauty, and it grows on you. Like you said,
yes.
Perhaps initially it wasn't there, but after a while you grow it and you look at it and you say, but this is a beautiful plant on its own, and it's got so much structure, so much beauty to it.
I was going to say, what I love for in my garden, I've got a tiny little patch, probably like a square meter, that I've put grasslands at the bottom. But then popping out of my grasslands, and my grasses are going to, you know, they've almost finished seeding now, then my aloe pops out through there. So when my grasslands aren't going to be looking so good, then I've almost created what I would find in out in the felt. And then you've got this aloe, like on the mountains now, you know, when you're driving, whether it be out towards Hartbeespoort Dam or in the Magaliesberg or around Pretoria as well, you have a look and you can see all these aloes along the mountain edges, and you just think, wow. They come with a sense of proud, or they've been there for a long time, and we just actually have to appreciate them. I think we have to be careful not to be tempted to buy them on the side of the road, though, because those are sadly taken from people's farms where maybe they didn't know they were being taken, or rather try and get them from reliable sources where they might not have been, I want to say, taken either because development has been done there or damaged.
And, you know, when you look at it, and we always think, oh, it's only the exotics that give beauty or that add beauty, but we have our own beauty for our climate and for our country.
Absolutely. I mean, they really are quite water-wise. And some of the varieties you can buy in the garden center now have been adapted or hybridized. So they're going to have really good flowering, and are more frost resistant, and they just they're adapted to be in a garden.
You know, Kerry, now when we're talking about the last season, have you found that some of those trends are going to be maintained, or you think they're going to change as we're going into the new season?
Sorry, I might have missed the question.
You know, with regards to trends, you know, when we looked at 2017, do you think now 2018 we're going to get, are there going to be a great shift in trends, or do you think it's going to continue with what we have?
I think some of it's going to stay the same. So like your edible gardening is very much going to stay around forever. But now what I've found has become so popular and trendy is edible gardening, but in containers or in baskets. So it's no longer, you don't have your vegetable garden in your garden. You have it in a whole lot of different variety of pots next door to your, it could even be in amongst your plants. Or you have it hanging off your balcony. And one of my favorites that I read about in Europe, and I don't think we've quite picked up on it here yet, but it's going to happen soon, is that you actually have a living salad bowl on your table when you have dinner at night. So at this time of the year, we've got all our leafy greens. Autumn and winter are a great time for all our Chinese cabbage, the mizus, the tatsoi, the white-stemmed cacti. So all those, your microgreens. So you're almost going to create them in little pots, pop them on your table, and then you just break off the greens to add into maybe the soup that you're having. Or I eat a lot of pasta, and then I add my spinach leaves to my pasta. But it wouldn't be something that I had picked from the garden. I would have my spinach growing in a pot, and I'm going to put it on my dinner table. And if I feel like adding some spinach, I just break it off there and then. And I'm quite excited about that new concept, because literally you are eating the living plant off your table rather than having to pick it first. So it should be washed, of course. But, if you're growing your own, you tend to be growing organically anyhow. And I think that's quite a nice new trend that will come through.
You know, I must say to you that the food security thing is very high on the agenda still. And what you said, a fantastic idea. I know that restaurants in Europe and so forth are doing this, where you come into a restaurant and you have all these, salad bowls around you, and then you can pick them up and then decide what salad you want to make your own mix.
Yes. So I think that's wonderful for me. The other one, which I think is really interesting, and it really, we can see it a lot in fashion, but I don't know if we followed it through into our gardens yet too much, is the color blocking with your opposite ends of your color spectrum. So you would plant blue and orange close together. And especially now, which we're going to have the beautiful poppies coming through. So you might have the citrus poppy mix at the back of your garden because they're slightly taller. And then in front of those, you're going to have the sky blue violas or midnight blue violas. So you have that complete contrast in colors, which I also think is a really interesting color because it encourages you to be quite bold in your choice of gardening and the colors that you plant into your garden.
I was just looking at some of the color spectrums. I think lilac is the color and they're talking about. And like you said, from the one extreme or from the one color, right to the other extreme. So lilac perhaps with yellow or lilac with, I'm just trying to think of maybe an orange or something. And I think that's
absolutely.
And that's some of the trends. What other trends do you think would stay with us?
I just have to go back to your lilac, and then I'm thinking almost more of the silver. Imagine if you had your curry bushes at the back of your garden, and then in front of it you have your yellow flowering calendulas. They've both got that really spicy flavor, so you could pick your calendula flowers to add into your curries. And then you've got your curry plant behind it, which you're using the leaves for anyway. So they're both useful plants, and they complement each other so nicely, like that silver, and then you have the yellow in front. Sorry, it has nothing to do with lilac, but I just like the color combination and the taste. I can almost taste it in my mouth already. so I think that's also one of the other ones.
Carry on.
No, I'm trying to think of some of the other trends that I've read about. Foliage, again, is also making a big comeback, and that's also, again, where you have your, and now we go into winter, your Nandina. Those are beautiful colors, and though we don't have the traditional, we don't have only the traditional, the baby Nandina, dwarf bamboo, but you have your, there's a new one called Plum, so it's got a more maroon. With the Nandina, you get all the different colors that are coming in. So you've got your lovely warm golden yellows, when then they turn in slightly red. And then you've got the new purple one, which I just mentioned earlier.
Now, you know, we had some of the trends with regards to some of the other plants. What about the ferns? Are they were trendy towards the end, and are they still very much fashionable?
So ferns are always a questionable one, because a lot of the initially, well, the traditional sword fern went onto the invasive list. And then a lot of people found it difficult to tell the difference between the different nephrolepsis that we might have. So quite a few garden centers actually stopped, like even ourselves, we stopped selling nephrolepsis because we were worried in people might not be able to tell the difference between them. But now it seems that we have got better. But I think if you're looking for ferns, they are still trendy, but rather try and look for the indigenous varieties. So more your terrace varieties rather than your nephrolepsis.
You know, let's just go back to the color. You know, I was just trying to get something about the color. You know, you were talking about the wide range of colors and so forth. And I found that it was a trend. It was going across into fashion as well, into homes, into paints. And I found that I'm not sure who's following who. You know, I'm not too sure whether the fashion industry following the plant industry, the green industry. I'm not sure who's following who. What is your take on that?
I was going to say, I think we would love to say that we are the leaders in the, what's happening in the fashion industry. But, you know, big leafy plants, so your ficus lyrata, with that gorgeous big leaf that's, I mean, probably triple the size of when you put your hands together. Those are, we've actually picked that up from fashion. That's become so popular. But then they're really difficult to get, because maybe 3 or 4 years ago, you couldn't give them away. And then the magazines went and made them fashionable, but we forget that it takes a long time for a plant to grow to the size that you would want it in your house. And I think so sometimes that's the other one that's looking really beautiful and has really come back into fashion now is like your philodendron. So they're looking incredible at the moment, and your monstera, you know, your delicious monsters. So big leafy plants in your homes have become very fashionable. I mean, even your mother-in-law's tongue, which you also get in a wide variety of colors. So that structure. And what I love best about these big leafy green plants that we are putting back in our homes is they have such good air purifying properties. So they really cleaning up the air as we, you know, whether maybe you're having, when we're going into wintertime, you might maybe have a fireplace, and even though you have a chimney, there are some particles that get into your home. So your big leafy plant is going to start absorbing those extra, not unwanted, air pollution that might be in your home. They absorb the different cleaning products, the pollution that comes from some of the ethylenes, the radiation that maybe comes from your TV or your computer. You know, so I'm a very strong believer of having healthy plants in your home, to not only to look good, but actually to clean the environment in which we live.
And I think that, again, you know, it's become very trendy, because when you look at some of the magazines and look at the, you know, the homes, you have this very big, you know, huge leafy plants all over.
Yes.
And I think but like you said, it not only looks beautiful, it also serves as a purifier, you know, it purifies the air.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
Yeah. I was going to say, sorry to interrupt you. You know me, I just get so excited. Is that it also makes you feel good to have plants in your home. And they did it, you know, a lot of businesses now on construction sites, they start using containers as their main office. And in Australia, they planted ferns and other leafy plants and mother-in-law's tongue into pallets, and they decorated these containers that were the production office, basically on a construction site. And they said the work productivity of the people within those offices, well, I want to say offices, within those containers on the site was just so much more, and they were more happy. They're such happy, is the right word. Because of the plant and the environment, it wasn't that stark environment where you go on and you just see the plan on the wall and you think, oh my goodness, this is how much I have to achieve today, and this pipe has burst. The sense of plant in that environment kind of gave you a sense of peace and relief. And then you thought, oh, it doesn't matter that a pipe has burst. I can actually fix it. And I think plants do that for you. They give you a sense of happiness.
Definitely, I think, you know, and it doesn't matter how small your garden is, how small a patio you have. If you have some green, it definitely does, you know, lift the mood.
Yes, yeah,
Now, you know, when we're talking about, you know, moving to smaller spaces and we're talking about containers and so forth, and it's become very trendy. Is it only one type of container? You know, we find containers coming in all different shapes, kinds of material and so forth. Which ones would you recommend?
I think it's actually such a personal choice. We did a display at the Garden Center once, and it was actually to showcase all the individual pots that we had. So, you know, the leftover. So when we bought a set, but then maybe we'd only sold three and not the fourth one. And it looked incredible because then instead of matching our pots, we matched the plants that we put in them. So they were all succulents or water-wise plants. So our combining factor was the plant type that we had put in them was all similar. And then the fact that all the pots were different is what created the interest. And I think that's, so you almost maybe don't want to have different pots and different types of plants because that might be too much different. So, you know, that might look like a bit of a smarty box or just a whole mix mash, which some people do love. You know, it really is an individual taste. But I think to make it still look, say, classical is to choose, okay, I'm going to have lots of different pots, but then let me see, let me plant, and I'm going to mention my favorite plant. Let me plant all different color pansies in there. So at least you have one thing that's all the same, but your pots are all different. And actually, I quite like that idea because often you get plants as presents. You know, soon it's going to be Mother's Day. So one of the wonderful gifts to give for Mother's Day is plants. And then they come in different pots. And I can't throw away anything. I use try and upcycle as much as I can. And so I do tend to be a bit eclectic in the pots that I use. I mean, I'm even eclectic in the teacups that I don't use. I put my baby orchids into. So I have a wonderful teacup selection, but it's actually just filled with baby orchids. So, you know, I think it is individual taste. I think some people would look at it and think, oh, my goodness, what is this person doing? But at least I've got all the same type of plant in my teacups.
Well, I think that is it. You know, like you said, very much personal taste, something that you that you'd want, you know, in your space. I think that's important. So it doesn't matter where you're living. If you'd like this particular type of pot in your garden, you put that in. It doesn't matter what the pot is, whether it's made of ceramic, whether it's made of, you know, asbestos, whatever it is. But that's the pot you'd want.
Yeah. I like the idea, though, of intermixing your pots within your garden space, though. Because our gardens have become smaller, we have to try and utilize as much space as we can. So almost like your vertical gardens, but I find those are sometimes a little bit hard to use, is to put a ladder into your garden, and then on your ladder you can put some of your pots. So you're creating a height where you weren't, say, allowed to be able to plant a tree because the tree would grow too big and take up too much space or make your garden very shady. So now you've created height, and you have six different pots on the different steps of the ladder, and I think it would look quite beautiful. Or, you know, hanging gardens have become so popular. So to be able to put some hanging hooks onto your wall, and then whether it's you're growing strawberries from the hanging garden or you've got one of the easy wave petunias that are hanging down beautifully, it's just to create different heights within your garden space to be able to make it look more full, but not full at a same level type of thing.
Let's finally, just before we round up, you know, just two other plants, the brassicas and the citrus. Tell us something about that.
Yay! Okay. I think the citrus is the yay part. The brassicas are, oh, my goodness gracious.
I was wondering, what is the yay for? Is it the brassicas and you don't have too many friends? If it's the citrus, you definitely have lots of friends.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too sure where the yay came from.
Yeah, definitely for the warm golden and orange colors of all the oranges and lemons that are going to be about. But, you know, there's actually so many new varieties of lemons out there that we don't have to stick to our traditional lemon Eureka and lemon rough skin. There's lots of different, and even grapefruits. Even the nachis, we get the clementine now in as well. So there's lots of different, I want to say fruit, it's not only in the citrus, that's out and about. I mean, I've got a variegated lemon. The leaf of the lemon tree is actually variegated. The lemon itself looks more like a grapefruit, and it's got a bit of a darker flesh inside it. But so I think, you know, you don't have to stick to the traditional. Obviously, the traditional is always really good, and they produce lots of fruit. But if you want something that's a bit of a talking point, go into your local garden center and see what you can find that might be different. Because there certainly is a wide variety of things out there at the moment.
I know, I was given an acai lemon, acai lime.
Yes.
And, you know, it's such a, you know, just a wonderful plant. You could take the leaves and put it into water. It gives you a lot of fragrance. You know, you get a little bit of fruit. But, like you said, you spoiled again for choices.
Mm. And then, I mean, with your brassias, even though you might not have as many friends, they just do really well at this time. And there we go again to the, when we used to plant our cabbages and our broccolis into our vegetable garden, which is lovely if you have the space to do that. I mean, please do. But also you could actually plant them into pots. So you're only going to plant one plant into a nice 23 or 30 centimeter pot. But it becomes quite a feature, is a broccoli in a terracotta pot. Or when the cabbage, the cauliflower head starts growing through, that beautiful white in, again, a terracotta pot or something like that. So I think you know, you can plant, you don't have to have big veggie gardens. And vegetables that we traditionally, you know, this is also a lovely time for the cabbages. All your brassia, your Brussels sprouts. I mean, we normally only eat Brussels sprouts towards the end of the year. But actually, they grow beautifully now, and it's time to start looking for your soup vegetables. So, you know, your celery is going to be nice. Your onions, I mean, the onions in the garden center, they're literally popping out of the trays. They're so happy. Your leeks are doing wonderfully. All your leafy vegetables, your cabbage, broccolis, we've spoken about, Brussels sprouts. So there's a lot in your garden that you can find to nourish you at this time of the year.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know how many of us will be nourishing some of the brassicas, but you take care, Granny. You take care. Wonderful program. Thank you for being with us. But before we sign up, just tell us what's where you're situated and where will you be.
Okay, so our one garden center is the Keith Kirsten in Midrand Waterfall, and then the other one is Colorful Splendor, which is in Craigle Park.
Well, thank you very much, and you take care. Thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you.
You know, I must say to you, I enjoyed doing a program with you all the time.
Me too. I really enjoy it. Thank you for the opportunity.
You take care. Thanks, Kerry.
Keep well.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Kerry Goodwin giving us some fantastic ideas of what is to be done at this particular time of the year. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to our program, Dare to be Different. My name is Ismail Bariaba, and we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest with us this morning. It's JJ von Rensburg. Many of you are still curled up in bed, and others would be perhaps out in the garden or perhaps around your breakfast table. And JJ is giving us some wonderful information. And if you have any queries or any questions, remember you could forward it to us. We're going to now look at what is to be done at this time of the year. JJ, you know, whilst we're talking about autumn, what can we plant at this time?
Oh, you know, varieties is endless, you know. I think that the most important thing is you've got to look at how much time you are spending in the garden and how much effort you want to put into the garden. You know, if you were to plant things like your poppies and your pansies, they're all wonderful. The flowers are nice and big, but unfortunately, you've got to deadhead them often. Otherwise, they will stop flowering. You want to plant something which you have large open spaces and you don't necessarily want to worry as much, maybe plant some of the macadam daisies. The macadam daisy seeds are so easy to grow. Even your primulas are amazing. And, you know, we've all been taught over the years that primulas will only want shade. In winter, primulas are better in semi-sun to full sun than what they do in the shade. So the variety is really endless. I mean, have you got your sweet pea seeds in as yet? They should be growing and they should be more or less knee-high already if you really want them to have a long flowering season. So, yes, go for it. Go and have a look. What is at the nursery? There is so much that you can plant now. And don't wait. Remember, if you are planting it a month later than what you should, it means that you will get a month less flower. When the plant is at its prime, when they are flowering at their best, you will have a month less flowers, more towards the end of the winter. So rather get them in the ground sooner rather than later.
Whilst you're talking about what to be planted, tell us what can be sown at this particular time of the year. I know people are looking at perhaps peas. Is that the only one that can be sown, or is it a bit too late?
Sweet peas can be sown. The Macallan daisies can be sown. Your elephants can still be sown. Your primulas can be sown. Your petunias. Petunias does so much better in the high salt over the winter months than what they do in the summer months. So rather sow your petunias or calendulas, your replacement for marigolds if you want that bright, large flowering yellow or orange flowers. They grow so easily from seed. So there's so much that you can sow. But it's the best would be to go to a nursery and to see what is available on the shelves. And if you don't, if you get nothing else, remember from seed to seedling to flowering takes about 2.5 months. So if you're going to wait for that, say another 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you might as well leave it until the next season, you know, until summer. But my advice would be do it as quick as possible, get it in the ground so that you can still have beautiful colors over the winter months.
And now we come to feeding. Many of us neglect, you know, and think, well, it's not necessary. All we need to do is just water it, and once it's watered, it would survive. Is that right?
I wish it was that easy. The initial growing, the initial germination, yes, definitely. Once you sow your seed, you only need to water them, and they will germinate, and they will grow, and you will have beautiful little plants coming up. Once they say about half an inch to an inch big, you've got to start feeding them so that you can get a nice, bushy, healthy, and vigorous. You want a vigorous, strong, sturdy plant. You don't want something which is long and leggy. You don't want something which is light green or a pale green in color. You want a dark green plant. You want to give it enough light that the plant itself will be able to grow more sturdier. Because if you sow your seeds in a dark shaded area, they'll grow long and leggy, and they won't have enough power or they won't have enough strength. So you want them to be strong, you want them to be short, you want them to be sturdy, and you want them to be self-supporting. You are not supposed to support them at all. So eventually, gradually, you've got to, as they grow, you've got to get them used to more stronger light or more intense light so that they can adapt to either a semi-shaded, sunny or shaded area where you're going to plant in them eventually.
Now, when you talk about feeding, what type of regimen should we take? Could you tell us, and what do you think we should be feeding them with?
All right, so it's very important for you to understand what's the difference between a plant food and a fertilizer. So normally when you would be planting, say, for instance, your roses, and you'll be putting some fertilizer around them, that is a slow-release, long-lasting product in the soil, which takes a long time before it's really made available to the plant. A plant food is what you would be using on your seedlings and on plants that you want to see an instant gratification from. So if you want to see that instant growth, you're supposed to use a plant food. Now, a plant food is normally a soluble product. So it would be either a 212, a 316, a 615, whatever. It's something which gets mixed with water, and as you then water your plant absorbs it a lot quicker, and they react a lot quicker to them. So just as we are able to drive through nowadays to get our food, our dinner from, you can get your immediate food into your flowers, into your plants, and you can see immediate results from them. So in the older days, we used to get a product called Multifeed. It is still available. However, there is a lot of other soluble 316s and 615s available nowadays, which works just as well for your seedlings. So go through to the nursery, ask them what soluble fertilizer or what plant food do they have available, and then you can alternate them. You can even use a nitrosol, for instance. Nitrosol is a very good one, which is high in nitrogen. So if you were to alternate a nitrosol with a multi-feed, you would give, at one stage, you'll feed the foliage and the leaves and the roots, where at the next stage, you'll feed the flowers and the general strength. So it's good to alternate them as well. And remember, you cannot over-fertilize, you cannot over-feed with a plant food. You can over-fertilize with fertilizer if you were to put that down too often around your plant, or you were putting down too much around your plant, you will be able to burn your plant. But if you were to feed your plant with a plant food every day, every second day, every third day, not a problem. Overall, your plant food cannot burn. All that it will do is it will make your plant thrive, it will make your plant grow a lot quicker and a lot better.
On a lighter note, it's not like us. When you give us too much food, we become obese.
Yeah, I've seen you before, Ishmael, and I'm pretty sure that you don't eat enough food.
Now let's go on to the next one. What about spraying? You know, what do we spray at this particular time? People would have, you know, it's cold, so there's not enough, or there wouldn't be insects and hochos. Is that a myth or is that a reality?
No, it is a reality. There will not be as many insects this time of the year. What there will be is a lot of fungal diseases, and that is more due to us overwatering the gardens than what it is due to natural circumstances. So, first of all, make sure that as you cut down on your watering, if there's any beds that has been wet or that is getting more water than what they than what you would want them to get, keep an eye on those, because you will definitely see the leaves turning yellow, the leaves getting all soft and not being firm anymore, or then getting spots on them. And that is all signs of different kinds of fungi. So very important for you to not overwater the garden this time of the year, not to water the leaves of the plants that much, because remember they take a lot longer to dry out than what they would do in the warmer summer months. And then to rather, if there's any signs of any fungal development, to immediately cut down on your watering even more and to spray against the fungus. What's very important is to spray in the early mornings or the late afternoons. If you were to spray in the middle of the day, a lot of the poison will just be broken down by the UV rays of the sun. So you've got to spray early in the morning or late in the afternoon. And also, if you were to spray in the middle of the day, a lot of it will evaporate without it being used at all, being doing any work on the plant whatsoever. So rather spray early in the morning, late afternoon, spray on the undersides of the leaves where necessary. But remember, if there's any fungal development on a plant, you normally only see the signs of that fungal development or of the fungus infestation after about a week or so. So any signs of fungus means that your plants have been affected now for the last 7 days. So if you were to spray today, do not expect any results within the next day or two. You would only really see your plants improving within the next week or two.
Pruning. Is this the right time to start pruning, and what should be pruned, what should not be pruned?
No, it's definitely way too early to prune. I wouldn't do any pruning as yet. I would, however, start transplanting. It's not a problem. You can start transplanting, especially if they are transplanting from one section of the garden to the other, which is in a similar condition, not necessarily being from a warmer side of the garden into a colder side of the garden. But pruning, I will definitely wait until at least the end of July, because if you were to, on your general plants, I'm not sure about your fruit trees, which normally gets pruned earlier, but on your general plants, I'd wait until at least the end of July, so that as soon as you get your new growth coming through in middle of August, end of August, most of the cold would be over, and your plants will be able to keep all the new growth. If you were to prune now, and you've got any new growth coming through before, the end of June, the chances of getting them damaged and getting winter burn on them, frost damage on the plants, will be very good, because that'll be fresh leaves. It will be new leaves. New leaves that's not used to high winds, not used to drying out, not used to the cold. So there's a lot of factors that can be damaging the plants at the moment. So I'd say definitely wait a little bit before you start pruning, more towards the end of June, beginning of July for your fruit trees, and then more towards the end of July for your normal shrubs.
You know, you just mentioned something about frost. Is it the right time now to put on frost covers, or is it a bit too early?
Definitely. Yep, it's definitely the right time. You can start putting on your frost cover onto your plants. I think it's a very important factor, a very important part of your autumn duties that you should be fulfilling now. But remember, that's covering your entire garden. Only cover what is really necessary. Remember, you've got to also make sure that your plants are able to harden themselves off. And if you're going to be covering them every year, you're never going to give them the ability or the chance, the opportunity to harden themselves off. So only really cover what is necessary on the plant. And remember, with your frost cover, try not to let too much of the frost cover lie against the leaves of the plant. Remember, the cold can still go through if it lies on the leaves of the plant. However, if it was a little bit away, if there was a bit of an air pocket between the leaves and the frost cover, that will keep the plants warmer and will keep the cold further away from the plants.
A question with regards to the type of material. Hessian plastic, black plastic, any preference?
Definitely rather a Hessian or a frost cover. Never cover your plants with black plastic, because if you cover it with black plastic, it's way too dark and your plants will sweat and burn on the inside. And even if you were to just leave it closed for 2 days and then open them up again, your plants will get sun damage. So no, never use plastic on your plants. A see-through plastic you can still use, provided that you will still be able to open it up. But remember, a see-through plastic can also act as a magnifying glass on your plant's leaves. So be very careful when you do put a see-through plastic on. Rather try and use a Hessian, or your frost cutter. Lithium is very good, it's very thick, it really works very well as a very thick blanket, but it must be opened up during the day. If you do not open it up, that your plants are able to breathe, unfortunately your plants will suffocate. They will really suffer in the shade, because again, your Hessian is very thick, and as soon as you then open your plants up, you will, they will be prone to sun damage or to sunburn. Best one to use, in my opinion, is the frost cover. And if the frost cover is too thin for you, you can double up or triple up on it to make it thicker, because it still allows air movement through, it still allows enough light through, and it's light enough that you can leave it on the plant. You don't have to remove it during the days.
And of course, the gardener's friend, mulch. Tell us about mulch.
I think this time of the year is probably one of the most important times of the year to add mulch into a garden, especially if you've got a cold garden. Because remember, mulch, so often people will say, I put mulch down because it makes my garden look pretty. Yes, it does make your garden look pretty, but the other advantages of putting mulch down is so much more. Especially now, yes, it will still retain your moisture, it will prevent evaporation, but the nice thing about it in winter is that it keeps your root systems cool, it keeps your root systems warm during the winter and cool during summer. So if you've got a nice thick layer of mulch in the garden, it will really help your plants survive the winter a lot better. It will help them grow out a lot quicker after the winter, and it will help them survive, because yes, I mean, some of the plants, remember, a plant's strength is in its root system, and if you can keep the root system nice and warm, yes, you'll definitely keep the plant warm, and you'll definitely make sure that it survives the winter. The other factor that mulch brings into the garden is it's a very good weed control. So weed seeds don't germinate where there's mulch. They don't germinate as easily. And then, of course, it keeps the microbes, the microbes and the bacteria active in the soil. It keeps them protected. So you'll find that as soon as you've got mulch in a garden, you've got a lot more microbes, you've got a lot more life, got a lot more soil, microbes and life in the soil. So your soil is a lot healthier than what you would imagine it to be. So definitely, if you've never put down mulch in the garden, don't collect all the falling leaves from all the trees that's busy shedding all their leaves. Don't get all the leaves, don't put them into the garden beds where you don't really get to that often. And if you want some nicer, better looking mulch, go to the nursery and go and get some bark chips. Remember, organic matter in terms of plant matter is a much better mulch than stone or anything that warms up. So rather use something which can absorb the heat and not necessarily transmit the heat back onto the system or back onto the plant. So often you'll find that people will put down stones, but the stones get so hot and it still blazes during the evening and it still dries out the plant from the underside as well. So watch out for that.
Well, thank you very much for all that information. And before we sign off, just tell us where you are again and what have you gotten for this weekend?
Okay, so this is we're starting to break down our gardens today. So for those of you who haven't seen the display gardens, you might still be able to see a little bit of it this morning, but we are breaking them down this weekend while we're starting today. And I've got to start with our new spring festival. We are out on Bayerson Deer Drive in Muldersdrift. So if you've never been to us, get onto the concrete highway, the N1, take the Bayerson Deer off and go towards Honeydew. It will ask you there, Honeydew or Johannesburg. You go to Honeydew, and we are 12 k's down the road on your right-hand side. So it's a nice drive out of town. Not too far that you've got to pack a picnic lunch or anything like that. It is a nice and close drive for most of the people that is in the Joburg area, but it's really worthwhile coming out. We've got the most amazing gardens at the moment still out in our normal gardens. We are starting to transplant the seedlings. So if you want to see any of the summer flowers still in flower or in bloom, jump through, enjoy the last bit of summer, beautiful green lawns. It doesn't look like winter has hit our gardens as yet. But yeah, I think it's a very nice time for you to still enjoy the last of what summer 2017, 2018 had to offer.
Well, thank you very, very much. And that was J.J. van Rensburg of Garden World. I must say that you're not doing anything this Sunday. Please take a drive. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And there'll be lots for you to not only to admire, but to also buy. And a lovely day to be out in the countryside. Like J.J. said, not very far away. And you definitely have a wonderful time. That's all from me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.